#1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Lay the down. Smack on jack.
Next time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
We die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now. This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan studios, here's Tony D.
Taking you through the night tonight on Yahoo Sports Radio on Coast to Coast. I appreciate you tonight listening to us as we continue to break down everything that's going on before your Thanksgiving holiday. And by the way, thankful for you, the audience listening in, tweeting us at Tony D Radio on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. I will be on the air tomorrow night. I will be off the next night. Adam Sager and Joe George will be taking over the final show of the week. I'm looking forward to that. I may not listen live to you guys, but I will catch your catch the podcast of that. To see what you guys are doing.
It'll be a fun show. We got some fun stuff planned. So
that's very cool. So make sure you tune into that if you are making this a part of your night for whatever reason, whether you're working or just driving around or you're an insomniac or whatever reason. All right, so we were talking earlier about this playoff committee. All right, so they've given some love out to the Big 12 finally. And then, you know, right in the Big 10 as well. Iowa's moving up. Ohio State went down, but, you know, went down to 8. But here's the question we were talking about with Alabama. All right, there's a lot of eye test love for the Alabama Crimson Tide. I thought their loss to Ole Miss was a bad loss. All right, Ole Miss is a fine football team. They've got one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. They have an offense that's putting up tremendous amounts of numbers, big numbers. But it's a bad loss. They turned the ball over 5 times. It wasn't good. Now, it's okay. Everybody has a bad loss, and the committee is sort of getting some leeway on this. But the reality of it is that the resume of Alabama's in terms of their schedule is not as strong as some other teams. But they're getting away with it because they look the part. They have NFL talent, and that's the way they look. I think this is a little bit dangerous. Not a lot dangerous, because I don't want to make a huge deal out of this, but I think it's a little bit dangerous. Because what happens is it becomes a battle of recruiting. And I don't want that to be a factor in this. What I want is results. And we can get swayed by the recruiting numbers that come out from all the sites that evaluate the high school talent. And I don't want the committee to be swayed by that in any way. Hearing how much NFL talent is on a particular team, or seeing this fine recruiting class that was ranked number one or number two 2 years ago finally come to fruition. I don't want that kind of influence, because it does matter how you're taking that talent. Right? It shouldn't be, well, Alabama has had the top 5 recruiting class in the last 3 years, so they must be good. So when they lose a game, they're still very good. Don't turn this into a recruiting game. Look, college basketball has Kentucky, Duke, a couple of other programs that recruit really, really, really well. Better than most teams in college basketball. And I know it's apples and oranges in terms of the sport and whatnot. But the reality of it is that they don't set up their postseason this way. Kentucky and Duke, with the number one recruiting class, aren't rewarded with an automatic bye into the Final Four. They're not rewarded with an easier schedule. They have to produce, and they have to win games, and they have to show up. And they have to do the right things. And if they're lazy and they're not winning and they fall apart, like Kentucky did a couple of years ago, where they ended up in the NIT losing to Robert Morris a year after they won the championship, despite injuries, that you get punished for it. I don't want this committee to start saying things like, well, the eye test really works for that team because they may be influenced by the recruiting and whatnot. And I just don't think it's a good precedent, because there is going to be some schools that are not going to pass the eye test, but find ways to win. And what instead, when you're talking eye test, is you're not talking about whether or not a team just looks good. You're talking about whether or not they have NFL talent on the roster. And that's 100% recruiting. And I just don't want to go. I just do not want to see the committee go down that road. I understand there's got to be a little bit of this involved, but if you lose 2 games and you're still ranked in the top, 5 or 6 or whatever. If you are getting the way too much benefit of the doubt, that's I'm going to have a problem with that. I'm going to question that just a little bit. All right, 800-777-2907. Otherwise, I think this sets up pretty interesting. I think this sets up really interesting as we head down the front stretch or the back stretch of the season. Is Notre Dame going to get back into this? Can Notre Dame get back into this? Well, all you have to do is watch out for Stanford. Where is Stanford ranked and how much love is the committee giving Stanford? That's the big game on Notre Dame's schedule.
I don't see how Notre Dame jumps up now ahead of the teams in front of them.
I don't either.
Because
same question,
Iowa,
though, that
Michigan
we had.
Michigan State are playing, and OU's playing Oklahoma State.
All right, so, well, if Oklahoma, here's the deal. If Oklahoma loses and Baylor wins out, there's no way the committee's keeping Baylor out.
I agree with that. Honestly, like, I think Clemson or Alabama has to lose for Notre Dame to get in my opinion.
All right, so, yeah, because you're
the
right.
Big Ten champion is in. As long as Michigan State wins and either wins out or Iowa wins out, you know, if it gets crazy and Michigan State loses to Penn State and then Michigan beats Ohio State and then Michigan, a two-loss team, wins the Big Ten, then there's going to be a whole bunch of chaos that way. But if it, you know, if it sets up the way it's looking with the Big Ten, that champion's in. Oklahoma, I mean, just with them jumping, what, they jumped 4 spots this week? If they go out and beat number 11 Oklahoma State, yeah, they're in as well. And then the top two teams are in if they win.
The problem that Notre Dame is having is that none of their wins are looking good today.
No, I mean,
look, go through the wins real quick. Georgia Tech was a ranked team when they played them. Georgia Tech ain't ranked anymore.
No.
That's been a disaster of a season. Navy is no longer ranked, right? Or at least I don't think so.
Navy's ranked. Yeah,
Navy's ranked.
They're ranked 16th.
Okay. USC is not ranked anymore. Is Temple still ranked?
I believe they jumped in at 25.
Okay.
But you got to look at this. Navy and Temple, they're not Power 5 ranked teams.
No, they're not Power 5.
Yes, they're ranked, but they're not Power, you know, they're playing each other and they're playing in a good conference, but it's a top heavy conference.
If Notre Dame wants to get back into this thing, they have to throttle Stanford.
Yes.
I mean, throttle Stanford, because Stanford is ranked 9th. They're 9th. Okay, so Stanford is ranked 9th. And they've got to beat Stanford like a drum. And then hope for,
some chaos.
Can I tell you where I think the upset's going to come in this? Where it could come. Okay. Look, Alabama is going to win out. Auburn doesn't have the horses to beat them,
right.
And Florida is not going to beat them either.
No.
Oklahoma, somebody in the Big 12, I think, is going to win this, is going to get in. I think it's either Baylor or it's Oklahoma, but I think a Big 12 champion is getting in this thing. And you're right about Iowa and Michigan State. The team that if I'm Notre Dame, that I'm really hoping for is Clemson.
Yeah.
That Clemson could lose to a very good offense in North Carolina. That's the team I could see taking a fall. It's just set up too perfectly for Alabama. It's set up for a Big 12 champion to be in. It's set up for a Big 10 champion to be in, unless it's Michigan. But if I'm Notre Dame, my realistic hope is that North Carolina beats Clemson in the ACC title game, and then I can jump in on that.
Yeah.
See, and then if I'm Clemson, okay, here's my problem with that. If I'm Clemson and I lose to North Carolina, let's say it's a classic. It's just a great game. Clemson shows up, but not quite enough. If I'm Clemson, I have every right to go, okay, there's our loss.
Right.
You don't mind if Oklahoma loses to Texas. You don't mind Alabama coughing the ball away 5 times at home to an Ole Miss team. You don't seem to mind if Michigan State loses to Nebraska.
Nebraska, yep.
Right? You don't mind Notre Dame losing us. You don't mind Baylor losing at home to Oklahoma. Now we give up a loss and you're punishing us for it. To North Carolina, a team you ranked 14th as one of the top offenses in the country. Stop. If I'm Clemson, I would have every right to go, don't do this. Don't do this whole thing where it's, you can lose early, but you can't lose late. The committee always said that the final tally would take everything into consideration and would not do that. But I almost think it's human nature that you have to do that.
That's why I think it would be, and I don't think it'll happen at all, but if Florida runs the table and beats Bama in the championship, do they jump, eight spots to get in? To me, that's very interesting, especially with what the committee just saw, barely beating Vanderbilt and barely beating, lost to Florida Atlantic, because if you watch the game, I mean, there was a clear pass interference in the end zone in the overtime where Florida Atlantic, all they had to do was score a touchdown and they win. They should have got the ball on the one and probably won the game.
And I have heard that the committee does look at things like that and go, yeah, all right, you know what? We are going to measure, not so much, they're not playing what ifs, but they are saying, look, I mean, you may have won, but here, let's see how you won.
Right.
And, let's take a look at what the storyline is and that kind of win. If the committee can't put a one loss SEC champion in the playoff, there's going to be hell to pay.
It's going to be all right. Insanity ensuing everywhere.
Somebody's getting fired.
Part of the country.
I don't know who, but
they will secede from the United States.
Yes, I mean, you're right. You're 100% correct. If the SEC, if the one loss SEC champion can't get into this thing, the SEC is forming its own professional league. Its own league. We'll play each other. We'll give out trophies. We'll play NFL teams and exhibitions. We don't care. We're done.
I don't care what happens. If Florida State goes in and beats Florida, and then Florida goes and beats Bama, the SEC will still go nuts if they don't get their SEC champion.
I know they will.
In.
And you know what? Now that they shouldn't get in, and you wouldn't. The logic of that doesn't sit with people. The logic of that would still. I still don't understand that.
The SEC champion is in the playoff no matter what. Right. That's the logic of everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And the other thing I saw about the Big 12, if they somehow don't get in this playoff, because they have it, this year they're set up perfectly with the way everything was scheduled. Having the best teams in the conference play each other at the end of the year, and it's helped a team like Oklahoma and Baylor get into the discussion. Whereas last year, they were not really playing anybody, and then they just kind of backed their way out as Ohio State came in playing good teams. Well, next year, they don't do this. They don't have this backloaded schedule. It's all spread out throughout the season. So that'll be very interesting, and they still don't have their conference championship, so it's just next year you can... As long as they cannibalize each other like they have, they're probably not getting in.
800-777-2907. Oh, yeah, it'll be a mess. Yahoo Sports Radio, 800-777-2907. You want to get into the conversation? We'll talk a little NFL coming up on Thanksgiving Day, Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again,
from the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
All right, I've been trying to follow the Stephen Bailey stuff on Twitter, and all I'm getting is that his surgery is going to be tomorrow. He was shot twice in the head. If you don't know the story real quick, we opened up the show tonight with the news that Stedman Bailey, who is serving a 4-game suspension, so he was in Miami kind of away from the team, was shot twice in the head. Wasn't life-threatening, but he's in critical but stable condition. He's going to have surgery tomorrow. So that's basically what we know. There hasn't been any change to the story since we brought that up 2.5 hours ago.
Adam Schefter says the Rams have spoken to him, and then basically everything you just said, he's in critical but stable condition and surgery tomorrow.
Well, updated as information comes to us, but that's basically where we stand right there with Stedman Bailey. On a positive note, in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors are 16-0. Nobody has ever gone 16-0. If I'm the Golden State Warriors, I treat every game like a playoff game and just go for whatever I can get out of this season. I go for 73. And I make it known we're going for 73. I don't pull that whole, we're just going to try to win every single game. You know, every game's a battle. And I'd go, you know, no. Right now, we just won six. We're 16-0. We have 16 games under our belt. We haven't lost. Yeah, we're going to go for 73. Sure. That's what we're going to do. And see if it happens. I don't know, man. I want to see them do it. But remember when we talked last week about, or earlier this week, about the difference between the two styles of play? I just feel like this, I feel like I wouldn't be as impressed, and I should be just as impressed. But the physicality of what the Bulls had to go through to get 72 wins, that's an impressive feat. This would be amazing if they get 73 wins. But I just don't feel the West is as tough as it has been in the past. Look at me. I'm trying to put parameters on this fantastic run by the right. Golden State Warriors.
It's just such a different NBA that we're all watching. That it's just, it's all offense based. And that's what that team's based around. They're based on offense.
It's not like, yeah, exactly. They're not a phenomenal offense in a defensive league. They're a good offense in an offensive league.
I saw a stat. They've made 199 threes this year as a team. In 16 games, their opponents have made 91.
That's crazy.
Steph Curry's on pace to make 405 threes. He set the record last year at 256.
Wow. I read somewhere that Luke Walton is not getting the credit for these wins. They go to Steve Kerr.
Oh, really?
Why is that? I hope that's a lie.
Yeah. I'll try and find more into that.
I got to find more. I'm like, I saw that and I went, wait a minute. That goes against everything. Steve Kerr's not even in the building. How could he get the wins? He's not coaching. You know, for whatever reason that he's left, it doesn't matter. If you're an interim coach, you're an interim coach. You'd get the wins if you're there. And if I'm, can you imagine if he goes a whole season, Luke Walton goes a whole season, and they go 73-9, and he is not credited with that? That's crazy.
So what if they win the championship under Luke Walton, is it Steve Kerr's championship as well?
Better not be. It better not be. I guess they're saying, oh, it's Steve Kerr's staff, but that's totally different. That's stretching. That is stretching. I don't know.
That'd be awesome to like come back the next year, and they open up, and it's like, Steve Kerr, the two-time
NBA championship coach. That would be weird. Luke Walton just sitting in the corner smiling, going, yeah, whatever.
Hey, he's just in the corner pouting.
Whatever.
Throwing towels.
Can't get any love. All right, I'm going to talk about the NFL next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us. All right, we've been talking about Johnny Manziel, and in case you've just joined us, Manziel is now a third-string quarterback as the partying video from Austin, Texas has emerged. I think the Browns did the right thing. I'm done defending Johnny Manziel or, you know, supporting the idea of Johnny Manziel being a quarterback. I'm kind of done now because, yeah, you know, I thought things were going well for him, but apparently not. All right, now, I saw this today in the Washington Times. And I thought it was really interesting because there's a movie that's coming out with Will Smith called Concussion. And it's about the doctor that started to realize that football head injuries are causing, you know, CTE and head trauma. And there's an effect here, and it's going to be Hollywoodized and whatnot. But we all know that the violence in the NFL is something that as fans, we have to deal with somehow, right? We know that there are football players who have played this game that are suffering pretty badly. And as the years take its toll, this is something the NFL is trying to address. But now hear me out on this. This article from the Washington Times, I thought made some interesting points. There is a belief that if the NFL suffers a death on the field, or if the violence becomes so great, it could destroy the game. But this guy at the Washington Times, and I'll give him credit, it's Darren Snyder, is asking a very interesting question. Is the lack of violence or the propensity to get rid of the violence hurting the NFL? And I thought this was a very interesting question to ask, because I've gone down this road many, many times with people. When we talk about the legislation of new rules in the league to make it a safer game, it is met many, many times by people and fans with a sense of, oh, you are wussifying my sport. It is easy to ask the question, if the NFL got so violent a player died on the field, would we continue to watch? First of all, we would absolutely continue to watch. And that is not a, I do not say that statement lightly or humorously. We are prone to that kind of stuff. Right? We want to see that kind of stuff. I know it sounds crazy, but we just as a society, we tend to gravitate towards that kind of stuff. But what if the NFL was really soft? He brought up an example. The Washington Redskins at the Carolina Panthers, where Greg Olsen was hit. He was hit up above, and the Redskins were able to score a touchdown. Chris Culliver was the one that was called for unnecessary roughness, and this was an absolutely blown call. But referees are so prone to make these whistles based on plays where you go, wait a minute, that's a legal hit. But it just looked at full speed like this can't possibly be a legal hit. So whistles are being thrown and flags are being flown based on this idea that better safe than sorry. Could that drive people away from the NFL? It's a big question to ask, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't think, and here's the thing about the NFL, and I am not a football fan because of the game. Let me make this clear. I don't find the beauty of the game attractive. Here is why I watch the NFL. It is part of my DNA as a sports fan. Two, I am emotionally invested in the results of the league. I am a fan of one team. I like a few others. I am emotionally attached to the outcomes of these games. All right? That's the way I'm wired. But I don't watch to see a beautiful check down pass with superior blocking downfield. If that occurs, and if I get a 60-yard run of beauty from Todd Gurley or Adrian Peterson, more the better. But you know what? I'm emotionally drawn to a 9-6 boring field goal-esque game, and I'm also emotionally drawn to a 38-35 offensive juggernaut showing. I am just emotionally drawn to the outcomes. There's a sense of pride when my team wins. There's a sense of anger when my team loses. I generate happiness for myself when they win or lose. There is something about it that tugs at my the results do it. So if the sport is too soft, I don't care. If the sport is too violent, I don't care. But I wonder if it does affect certain people. I think this article is actually really interesting because I'd never really heard this question phrased like this. What if Roger Goodell just kept pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing? And eventually, like, quarterbacks had to wear flags. And if you just grabbed the flag, that was a sack on the quarterback. But remember, he did it for the good of the game so that the $100 million quarterback would hardly ever get hurt. I mean, what would you think? Right? What if 50 years from now, the league is doing away with tackling? What would we think? I think this is a fascinating question for a changing sport, for a changing culture. We want the game to be safer. There are multiple benefits to make the game safer. If you're a fan, here are the benefits. One, you do run a less of a risk of your star player being out for multiple games. Nobody likes that. Listen, I'm a Steelers fan. If Ben Roethlisberger's out one more game, I'm going to lose my mind. He's already been hurt twice this year. Right? We don't want to see that. Two, in general, we don't want gruesome injuries. I don't need to see a guy break his leg. I don't need to see a guy break his forearm. I don't find pleasure in watching a tackle of a quarterback and I see his leg snap in half. I don't necessarily need to see that. The matchups in games that don't even involve your team are better. Look, Brock Osweiler is a fun story, but Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady is a lot better one, again. But we're not going to get it because Manning's hurt. But to what level would you what level would you accept? You know what I find fascinating? Listen to this. This is what I find fascinating. We love football. We can't wait for it to start. Lord knows, we did a team a day in the summertime just to lead up to the NFL start of the season. It's my favorite time of the year. It encompasses the holidays that I love, the cool weather that I love, the sport that I love watching in both college and professional. It makes my weekends go by much better. I love talking about it with you guys. I like it when you guys talk about it with me, Twitter, all that stuff, right? But listen. I don't want an 18-game schedule. I want them to dump that idea faster than they can. I never want it to come up again. I have no interest in an 18-game schedule. And you know what? Polls say you don't either. Why? Why wouldn't you want more of this? Seems logical. Because you know and I know, 18 games, just too much. Attrition, man. Damage. Injuries. Playoffs being played by backup quarterbacks that we've said number of times that we don't have any good ones. I don't want 18 games because I'm worried that the product suffers. No, too much of a good thing isn't a good thing. I remember making this point over and over again, and people thought I was crazy, and then later on, people told me I was right. Because the initial reaction to 18 games would be, of course I want more football. Why wouldn't I want more football? I love it. I don't want it to ever go away. I'm actually sad when it's over. Let me tell you something. In this business, and I've done this for a long time, the saddest day of the year for me is not the Tuesday after the Monday after the Super Bowl. That's a fun day. Tuesday, I can carry it a little bit. But by Wednesday and Thursday, later on in the week, I got to start focusing on something else. That just depresses me. I have just spent months and months and months talking about the season. And when it comes to an end, I've got to shift gears. Now, I like college basketball, but it's not the same kind of an emotional attachment. But wouldn't I want to extend that? You'd think, but I don't. And I don't think many of you either. I don't want the product to be destroyed. But I also am worried about the flip side of the argument. If Roger Goodell continues to say, rule change, rule change, rule change, rule change, rule change, would we look at this and go, eh, it's not even the same game, man. It's just not even the same game. He reminds me of the quote that Jack Lambert said 30 years ago with the Pittsburgh Steelers, that one day quarterbacks will wear dresses. That was over 30 years ago Lambert made that quote. And yet here we are in 2015, and I'm still wondering if that day is coming soon. When you won't even touch the quarterback, you'll get a theoretical sack. Like, oh, he was there. He was in the cone. So he gets credit for it. Because when you pay a guy $100 million, the last thing you want to do is have him sit on that bench. And if you're the league and you start noticing that more and more of your $100 million quarterbacks are sitting on the bench, it may not be extreme like by putting a flag around their waist. We may never get to that, but trust me, there'll become a day where you even breathe on the quarterback, you'll get a flag. We may be heading there already. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. What do you think of that? Is the nonviolence in the NFL or the move towards the nonviolence in the NFL, is that something that concerns you? Do you find the sport to be softening up much to your dislike? Do you see the trend of, man, they're not even going to hit anymore? Not today, not tomorrow. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about 50 years from now. Where is this sport? Where is this sport 100 years from now? Is it so soft it doesn't resemble anything? 800-777-2907. I thought this was very interesting. It's WashingtonTimes.com, and the article is, with all the rule changes, as the NFL started to become too nonviolent, Darren Snyder wrote it. It's a very good read. I highly suggest it. It did make me think, and I think about this stuff a lot, because I'm more of a, I am a very big picture guy. If you listen to this show, I'm a big picture guy. I like to see things and say, you know, overall, what does this mean? How big does this get, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm into this kind of stuff. So if you're interested, again, Washington Times, good article. 800-777-2907. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. And hey, listen, I need a few more likes on our Facebook page. I got to reach a milestone my wife said I wasn't going to get. Hit me up on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. Let me know you're out there. We'd love to say hi to you. 800-777-2907. All right, coming up, the three games on Thanksgiving. We'll talk about those next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on.
Back to him.
Back to the Quick and Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
I still chuckle. Johnny Manziel went from first string to third string. And they didn't even play a game. I mean, seriously, think of, let that settle in for a second. They didn't play. He didn't show like, oh, he threw five interceptions. They didn't do anything. And he went from first string to third string without seeing the field. That's really screwing up.
He went messy. Oh, yeah, we're going to let him start the rest of the year to, yeah, you're never going to play here again.
Based it on a video that TMZ got of a party in Austin. That's so crazy.
I still don't understand why they're keeping him around. Why don't they just cut him?
Just let him go.
What's the point?
God, it's clear you hate him. It's clear. Jesus. All right, let's go to Damon in Dallas. You're next up on Yahoo Sports Radio. Oh, Damon, staying on the line. I was going to, man. I know people don't like waiting on hold for very long, especially on this show. You're not really have to wait on hold for very long. I used to hear shows like I worked at a news talk station and they had a host that would keep guys on for like 45 minutes. Like, who stays on hold for 45 minutes to get like 2 minutes of talk to make a point? Like, yeah, I think Newt Gingrich needs to resign. Click. Waited 45 minutes to say that. 800-777-2907. God, I still can't. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be laughing at Manziel's predicament. No, yeah, I should. I've had enough of that guy. I was a huge Johnny. I was such a big Johnny Manziel supporter. This is getting crazy. I am like striking out every which way. And if I get behind you, your career is toast. Forget it. You're done. If I think you're going to be decent, you are. It's the kiss of death. Derek Dooley at Tennessee, Johnny Manziel. Who else did I say was going to be good and it didn't work out? I know. I have a bunch of them. I'll figure it out. Ken Wisenhunt. Oh, yeah, Ken Wisenhunt. He's a quarterback whisperer, man. He's going to be great. 3 wins. Year and a half gone. Great. All right, let's go to the Thanksgiving games coming up on Thursday. Dallas and Carolina. Now, let's start with the first one. Philadelphia at Detroit.
I wish this game was
entertaining.
Me too.
I may have to watch the end of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade before I have to flip over to that.
It might be more entertaining.
My wife and I fight for the main TV every Thanksgiving. We have 4 TVs in our house. We fight over 1 TV. For the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade versus the football. Now, it's not so bad in the Central Time Zone. In the Mountain Time Zone, it was a nightmare to get it to switch over. And I decided, all right, fine. Fine. I will go upstairs and watch football. You watch a Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Call me if you need me to help you with the turkey. Which, by the way, she will not let me fry. Have you ever had fried turkey?
Yeah.
It's delicious, is it not?
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And my wife's like, nope, I make my turkey my way. And I love my wife's turkey. That's fine. She just cooks it well. But I said to her, can we have 2 turkeys? No. I'm like, really? Cool? Really? I'm like, we had fried turkey. One year, a friend of mine came to the house to fry a turkey. and he brought his fryer, but he didn't have the hook that comes with the turkey. So he just took like clothes hanger wires and made one. He almost, the turkey almost fell into the pot of oil, which would have gone onto the flame, which would have burned my house to the ground. And we were like a couple of feet away from the house in the backyard. I've never been more scared. I thought he was going to burst in flames. I thought I was going to have to get the hose and put him out, like, shh, and then take him to the hospital. Yeah, frying a turkey is tough. All right, Dallas, Carolina. I like the fact that the Cowboys are favored in this game. Good for Vegas. Good for the people that make the lines here. Because I think Dallas is going to win this game. I think Dallas absolutely has to win this game. We said this yesterday. It's not technically a must win, like a must win, like in an absolute sense. But I'm telling you can't fall that much behind on the Giants. The Giants play the Redskins. You can't fall that far behind on them if you're going to get back in this race. This has got must win written all over it. And I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to pull this off. Now, Thursday night, while you're eating leftovers, Bears-Packers, Lambeau Field. If the Bears had beaten the Broncos, this game would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
This would have added a little bit of flavor to it. They would have been 6-4, one game behind the Packers. No, one game behind the division, right? Because both teams are 7-3. Vikings and Packers are both 7-3.
They would have been two games out because they would have been 500 if 5-5.
Oh, okay, okay. So yeah, because they're 4-6 now, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. So two games, but still, it still would have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still interested due to the fact that the Bears are supposed to have Matt Forte and Alshon Jeffery, who they didn't have against the Broncos. So, I mean, that makes it a little more interesting. And it's always, I mean, Aaron Rodgers beats up on the Bears every year. The only time they beat them is the game where Shea McClellan broke Aaron Rodgers' collarbone and knocked him out. I mean, so it's something that Bears fans want to see, and hopefully we get it. It'd be a very nice Thanksgiving Day present, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, right now it's just hard to have any kind of motivation going to the game against Packers as a Bears fan.
By the way, Alshon Jeffery should send Lane Kiffin a check every single year to his charity and label it gas money. Lane Kiffin told Alshon Jeffery, if you go to South Carolina, you'll be pumping gas after graduation.
Really?
Yes. And he made it to the NFL. If I was him, I'd write a check to Lane Kiffin's charity, and I'd write gas money on the check every year. I would contribute every year. I'd say, you know what? I'm dumping money in your charity, but I'm doing that every year. Lane Kiffin is a snake recruiter, man. He's slick. He knows he really doesn't mind breaking it all down for you. Yeah, so on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being 3 games you can't leave the couch for, 1 being go out and play football, go play turkey ball and go watch something else. This is like a 6. I think the Carolina-Dallas game trumps the weekend.
Yes.
The Eagles and Lions, it's like, oh, somebody's got to win this turd of a game. And I think the Bears and Packers could be really, really competitive.
If you ranked them, it'd be Dallas, Carolina 1, Green Bay, Chicago 2, Detroit, Philly 3.
Detroit, Philly. Oh, is that the Buck Aikman game? Yeah, that'll be the Buck Aikman game. Oh, I'm sure Joe Buck will have a lot of cool things to say about that mess. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.